What was the condition of Israel during Amos's lifetime? How long had they been independent of an independent nation from Judah, separated from Judah? Anybody know?
When did they, remember what year they separated?
Well, I don't remember exactly the year, but they had been separated for somewhere around 150 years. So they had lost any semblance. They had not had any righteous kings. So they were just led further and further and further into idolatry and coarse living, cruelty, selfishness, thievery. They did just about everything that they could possibly do. Who was the king of Israel during this time of Amos? Anybody know?
Jeroboam and Joash.
Okay. So with Jeroboam the second, right? Okay. And he was a righteous king, right?
Wrong.
No, it was bad. Okay. He was not very, very sharp, was he? But he was somewhat successful in his attacking some of the surrounding territory and claiming it and adding it to Israel. And so they enjoyed some wealth during that period of time. While Jeroboam was king, they gained some additional land. And so with that came wealth and recognition everybody seemed to be happy and everybody seemed to be enjoying that. Is that true? Everybody in Israel just lived so nice?
Not everybody. That was one of their downfalls, is that they were oppressed by their own people.
Yeah, they had the privileged class and the royalty and the wealthy people, but everybody else was treated very courteously and righteously. Is that correct? No, of course not. They oppressed their own people, didn't they? And this was one thing that God just couldn't stand. And they just became, of course, Jeroboam, the original Jeroboam, set up these idols in Bethel and Samaria, and to keep his people away from Jerusalem and the temple there. And then every high place that they came across, they set up an idol worship in Ashtaroth and those places as well. So they were just completely corrupt people, weren't they? They had just gone away from God entirely. So it got to the point where Amos just couldn't take it anymore. So he decided he was going to travel north to Bethel, and that's where he started announcing God's word to the people. And you know, later on, at least it's not written down in Scripture, but it is something that has been passed down through the ages with the Jewish people and has been written down in other manuscripts and this type of thing, that Amos was actually struck by the priest who was there at Bethel. The king's son, was, of course he wasn't even Levite, but he was the priest there in Bethel, and he was struck in the head with a club, Amos was, by this night, and it injured Amos, and he went home and died there in his hometown, and he was approximately 75 years old when that happened. Now, that's been passed down through the centuries in certain manuscripts that aren't part of the Bible, but kind of an interesting thought. And but Amos was not shy, was he?
No.
And he went there and he told it like it was. And so this book is a series, a collection of Amos's sermons and his announcements and his visions of messages from God. So in chapter 1 and 2, there's a series of messages to Israel. And what's interesting is it starts out Amos going to prophesy in Israel. And then he goes on not only to prophesy and to tell he's going to prophesy in Israel, and he gets to that a little bit later, but he starts beating up on the surrounding countries, doesn't he? What are some of the surrounding countries that he beat up?
Syria, Gaza, Tyre, Edom, Ammon, Moab.
Yeah. Then he started out and he started naming all these various nations that surrounded the country of Israel. Who's at Damascus? Who's that? Where's that at? What country is that?
Syria.
It's still in Syria.
That's Syria, isn't it? Still is. Okay. How about Gaza? Who lived in Gaza?
Do you still live there?
Yeah, back in the days of Amos. These were the Philistine people, Canaanites. And what's happened to them, they've just disappeared out of history. But God said that that was what was going to happen to them. So Amos is telling all the bad things that are going to happen against him, the Canaanites. What about Tyre? What do we know about Tyre?
The Phoenician.
Okay. Well, they sent a lot of products to build the original temple.
Yes, that is right. Tyre and
Sidon.
The king of Tyre and David were very good friends.
Yes.
And David hired people to from Tyre. The king hired him. He had 40,000 people cutting timber. Can you imagine that? 40,000 people cutting timber. And they hauled it into Tyre and they shipped it down by water down a little bit closer and then overland in Jerusalem. And it was used in the building of the original temple. But what else do we know about Tyre? What happened to Tyre?
They were destroyed.
Yeah, they built a city out in the water on a man-made island, didn't they? They thought they were impregnable. What happened to them? Who came along and destroyed them? How about Alexander the Great?
The Greeks.
Yeah. They came through, Alexander did, and he built a causeway out from the original ruins of Tyre on the land, and he took that stuff and he built a causeway out to their island and defeated them. And that's where Tyre disappeared to. Kind of an interesting thing. How about Edom? Who's Edom?
Esau.
I'm sorry?
Esau.
Yeah, they were cousins, weren't they? They were cousins of the Israelites. This was Esau's family, Edomites. Where did they live?
In Edom.
Far side.
Yeah, that's
of
a good idea, in Edom. They lived in the hills and the mountains. Remember, God said, I'm going to tear you down, I'm going to make you disappear. And your lofty heights are not going to save you, they're all going to come down.
It's
And that's exactly what happened to the Edomites, didn't they? Why is God so against the Edomites?
Because they abused their brothers, the Israelites.
Yeah, that's exactly true. You know, remember when God said, Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated. Why did he hate Esau?
Love this.
Esau turned against God, and they made up their own human sacrifice gods.
Well, they certainly went to idols, that's for sure, but you remember back
when...
He sold his birthright. He didn't value his birthright. And you know, what was the birthright? Who was that for?
The firstborn.
That was the eldest son, the firstborn. And what was so valuable about the birthright?
He had a double portion of everything, I believe.
He got a double portion. Yeah, what else?
God's promise to Israel.
Yeah.
His father.
He didn't care about the blessing through Jacob, who was his father?
Isaac.
Isaac.
Oh, thank you. Skip my mind. Anyway, yeah, he didn't care about the blessing from his father, Isaac. And he was willing to sell it for a bowl of soup. And so God hated him for that. And so this is going to, the destruction of Edom is going to come back and haunt him. What about Moab? Who was Moab?
One of the descendants of Lot, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so they were cousins as well, weren't they? What happened about Moab? Why was God so unhappy with Moab? And of course, they become idolized as well, and over a long
period of time. I believe they stood against Israel when they were on the Exodus.
They would not allow, and Edom as well, Edom and Moab both, would not allow the Israelites to pass through their land. Remember that? And they sent messengers to these people and said, well, we won't drink any of your water, we won't eat any of your food or harvest any of your produce. Just let us pass through your land. And they both refused to do it and actually took sides several times, both of them, with Israel's enemies to defeat them. Okay, so we know about, what about Judah? Amos mentions Judah as well. What do you think about that?
They say they despise the law of the Lord.
Yeah. He's bringing curses against Judah as well, isn't he? Because of their sins.
It says they sold the righteousness for silver and the poor for a pair of shoes.
Yes. And so after Amos gets through beating up these surrounding countries, then he really gets down to digging and slamming his main subject, and that's the country of Israel. And he accuses the wealthy and the privileged people and the royalty people of cheating others, lying, stealing, whatever they can come up with, of ignoring the poor, taking advantage of the poor, of not being concerned about them, caring nothing about them, unjust care, allowing them to be sold into slavery for their debts, and then denying them fair representation when they appeal. So Amos, what did Amos ask? What question did Amos ask? And he say, is this the same family that was sold into slavery in Egypt and lost all their rights in Egypt and God freed? This is the same family, and you're doing the same thing that was done to you? God asked that. So Amos, what does he say? He says, the party's over. He says, God is through putting up with this. And God has reached these men. That covers pretty much chapters 1 and 2. How about chapters 3 and 6? 3 to 6. These are a collection of messages that express Amos's concern for Israel and concern for its leaders. And of course, when I say Amos is speaking God's concern, isn't he? That's what he's talking about here. God's putting his words in his mouth. In Amos 3, verse 2, God says, I chose you, Israel, from among all the nations of the earth. What is this an indirect referral to? When God says, I chose you, Israel, from among all the nations of the earth.
When they were chosen as Israel and set aside as God's nation.
Okay, that's true. But God says, I chose you of all the nations in the earth. I chose you. What's this a referral to?
Remember it goes right back to Abraham, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, remember in Genesis 12 when God took Abraham out of the country of Ur, Chaldee, and made him a great nation. And God told him that's what he was going to do for him. It's kind of interesting when you look back at Ur of Chaldee. They didn't know who God was. They probably worshipped him ignorantly, along with a bunch of other deities. But it's kind of interesting why God chose Abraham out of all of these people. So he must have had an honest heart. Must have been a good person. Must have been trying to follow whatever his beliefs were as faithfully as he possibly could. So God chose him. And this is what God says. I chose you, Israel, from among all the families of the earth. But God says, because of them, because I chose you from all the families of the earth, your sin and your rebellion is going to cost you big time. God says, cost you greatly. Amos expresses Israel's sham worship and offerings. And God, Israel did. They offered sacrifice and prayers and offerings to the Lord, but it was a fake worship, wasn't it? They weren't serious, and they weren't, and of course, they had all the other idols and Ashtaroths and, available there that they chose to worship as well, so God was just one of several that they worshiped. But Amos 5, verse 24, says, let justice flow like a river. And Amos is encouraging these people in Israel, let justice flow like a river. And and righteousness like a never-failing spring. So because of their rebellion and their wickedness and sinfulness, what God says he's going to do is send the day of the Lord. Have you heard that phrase before? The day of the Lord? But it's going to be, in this case, it's going to be a great and terrible act of justice and vengeance on Israel. And it's coming. What's going to happen to Israel as time goes by? And this is going to happen to Israel about 40 years after Amos is prophesied. What's going to happen to Israel?
They're carried away for the most part, and other people are brought in and settled in their place.
Yeah, that seemed to be the way that they kept rebellion and uprisings to a minimum, as they took people and switched places with other people and brought foreigners in and settled them in the land, and then took the people in the land and put them and seated them in some other land. And what do we get from that, by the way?
Samaritans.
Yeah, Samaritans.
They were also told that they would no longer be a nation.
Well, and what happened to Israel? They no longer became a nation, did they? Finally disappeared. What did they have? 12 kings, and they had half a dozen in 1 year. 12 kings, I think, after Jeroboam II. But they didn't last very long. They just kept getting worse and worse. And there was some underhanded stuff going on. One of the kings was paying tribute to the Assyrians, and he went behind his back and went down to Egypt and dealt with the Pharaoh down there, and king of Assyria found out about it, and that was the end of the kingdom of Israel. And Amos, he saw, and he prophesied, he saw coming up a swarm of locusts that covered the land. And there were how many different kinds of locusts? Half a dozen different kinds of cutting and eating and leaf eating and flower. I mean, they had a whole bunch of different swarms of, and kinds of locusts that came through and ravaged the land. And then on top of that, had famine that came through, no rain, and land dried up and scorchingly hot and so forth like that. And Israel was just kind of like an overripe fruit, just ready for the picking. And that's what happened. And in fact, when the invading armies came through, they destroyed everything. They broke down all the temples, they broke down, and they completely destroyed everything. What they didn't destroy completely, they hauled off to other lands. But it's an image of God's justice. And this is the end. So Amos's words, what? Amos is talking, he says, we need to return true worship of God. Now, you know, there were faithful people in Israel. We know that. Not everybody was wicked. Not everybody was following the idols. But there were some faithful people there, I know. But God separates a little bit of that in these chapters about destroying the wicked, but saving the poor and the righteous. I know that there were faithful people there. But Amos says, you know, you need to return to true worship. And that should include justice for everyone, righteousness, love for one another. And if you have that, everything else will fall into place. Is God's wishes ever changed? God, does God wish that now? Sure he does. And, you know, this is, we look back on this, and we can see what a terrible condition the country of Israel was in, and we can compare it with our countries today, can't we? I don't know, you know, I doubt if there's a whole lot of countries in this world really that love America. I think most of them are envious because of our prosperity. But I think they would do us harm if they thought they'd get away with it. And we see that everywhere in the world. And, you know, so far we've not been doing badly, super badly, about worshiping the Lord. It's gone downhill over the last number of years in our lifetime. You can see a great difference. And but, you know, there's hope for us in the future, but we need to consider God's wishes first before anything else. And I think I typed this, double typed this, so I'm not going to go over this again. Because I made my mistake in double typing, so we'll just ignore this next section. Okay. That was number three. So we'll go on to number four. Oh, man. Okay. So, chapter 7, 8, and 9 is really Amos' work and where he's getting down to it and where he is calling for a return to true worship of the Lord. And he's talking about what a great thing it would be. But the last chapter, last verse, last paragraph, excuse me, offers a glimmer of hope. God says, out of the ruins one day, you'll restore the house of David. God will bring a king from David's lines and rebuild his people. And it includes not only Israel and Judah, but other nations as well. Who do you suppose God is talking about?
Christ.
I'm sorry?
Christ.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the hope that is going to allow Israel to return. And that is the coming of the Christ. And, of course, we know about that, studying the New Testament. Christ came, restored the lineage of David. Where do we find the lineage of David in Christ's background? The Gospels. The Gospels? Yeah. And one of them is a lineage through who? Mary. Yeah. The other one is a lineage through Joseph. So it goes both sides, so there's no doubt as to what, even though Joseph was not biological father, but what fascinates me a lot about this Old Testament is the referrals way back in those days to the coming of Christ, and how accurate those prophecies were by these other people. Next week, we're going to have to finish early tonight, I guess. We have got a huge book looking us in the eye for starting next week. What book is that? Obadiah. And it is a huge, long book. One chapter. So we'll go through that pretty quickly.
I started just looking at it and I started to say, wait a minute, it's not very big in my Bible.
I don't know, I think it's right up there with Psalms, you know.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. Isaiah is in there too, yeah. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, Obadiah will be our study for next week, so read that one chapter and we'll talk about that next week and go from there. So that'll be a fun, quick study. Yeah.
In time, how does Amos fit in with Jeremiah?
I think Amos is actually a little earlier than Jeremiah and Ezekiel and those, and Daniel, that group.
Okay.
Yeah, he's earlier than that.
Because they cover a lot of the same territory, same ground.
That's right, they did. But, you know, you remember Israel, Israel disappears. And during Jeremiah and Ezekiel's time as well, Israel is already gone. And Judah is going to follow during the time of Jeremiah and Ezekiel, the last of the kings, Zedekiah, and I forgot the last three or four kings, Jehoiakim and Jehoiachin and Zedekiah and so forth. Those are the last three or four kings of Judah, and finally they're just carried off and into captivity, and that's the end of Judah for a while. And but Amos is a number of years earlier than that, a couple hundred years, I think. So, I think Amos is like 750, somewhere in that neighborhood. And Jeremiah and Ezekiel and Daniel are all about 567, 570, right in that area. 100, 150 years later. I've forgotten how to looking at the years there. I studied that before, but I've kind of forgotten where they exactly fit in. Okay, anybody else got anything tonight?
I have a question.
Yeah.
So I was doing some work in this book, and one of the questions asked, what would the sinners who shall die be saying? And in 9:10, it said, all the sinners of my people will die by the sword. Those who say the calamity will not overtake or confront us. What do they mean by that?
Well, read it again, your question.
The question was,
comment.
What would the sinners who shall die be saying?
Okay.
And so it was in verse 10 of chapter 9. All the sinners of my people will die by the sword.
Yep.
Those who say the calamity will not overtake or confront us.
Yeah, and that's the ones. Oh, don't worry about that. Calamity is not going to overcome us and overtake us. That's the answer to your question.
Okay. But
so the Israelites for years have been God's chosen people. So God has protected them. God has saved them. God has bailed them out. And they're hanging on to that.
Okay.
And so they're saying, you know, all this is happening around us, but surely it won't happen to us because we're God's chosen people.
Okay.
I said that God has chosen us. We're number one.
he'll never fail us.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll go first the second time.
And so they don't listen to all of the rebukes. You know, early on last week when we read, you know, just how many times did he say, if only you would repent, if only you would turn back. And then he goes on to say that your sacrifices and your songs, they sicken me, that I won't accept your fatted calf. They were worshiping. They were worshiping. They were just worshiping wrong.
Yeah. You know, they had all their own priests.
They had, yeah.
Yeah. The poor Levites.
It was this false sense of security, which we can get lulled into. I think that we have to, you know, we have to pay attention to that. You know, we can join into all of the hoopla that's out there that brings people into a building, and, you know, but what does God want? So these people were thinking, it's never going to happen to us. We're God's people.
That's right.
Look at all the times he saved us in the past.
But God said, if two people walk together, they have to agree. And he kept telling them, you're not agreeing with me.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's to me, when I read Amos, I'm like, wow, you know, it's scary. Because I think a lot of these people that calamity fell upon were just shocked. Even though Amos is standing there telling them. You know, and then there's the flip side of it where Amos is standing up and speaking the truth. And they're like, we don't want to hear this. We can't bear this. Kill him. So where do we hear that today? So I stand up and I teach against all of the filth and the perversion of the world and the sexual immorality and all of that. And what does the world do? They hate me for it. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Kill him. Persecute him. Shut him up at whatever cost. We don't want to feel that. What do we want to do? We want to worship God the way that we want to worship God. Feel good about the way that we worship God and not have anybody tell us anything any different. And it's a dangerous place to be.
Well, if Jesus was killed because of what he was saying, and he was doing all the right things, so we have to be extra careful of little things.
But I do think it's interesting, like that question poses, that these people, they've just been raked over the coals, and they have no clue.
I don't think that was the first time.
No, he's been telling them all along.
God sent the prophets to them for a long, long time.
And
they murdered them and did all other kinds of bad stuff to them and ignored them. So Amos wasn't the first one with this message. But like Dean says, they just ignored him and ended up killing him. But
these people were enjoying the life, too. They were doing everything they wanted to do and more.
Yeah. Well, isn't that what we do today?
That's what we do today.
Sure, we do. Exactly the same thing.
So did you say it took 40 more years before God actually wiped? So Obadiah
40,
came and gave his spiel.
Well,
and then
Obadiah.
And they came there.
Look at Obadiah. I think that he is prophesying against Edom. I think that's his primary target is Edom. I think we studied that in before the book. We'll see that. Where Amos was targeting Israel. And so. But, you know, they kill the prophets over and over and over again. God sent them prophets, they killed them, did some terrible things to them. But ultimately it cost them in the end. And because of their false worship and their encouraging all the wickedness and the unrighteousness that went on in that country. So we'll see the end of Israel in about 40 years after this.